as many of you know, I have a very long history with this church. And whenever I come in here, I look at the front and I see the text that used to be up there all the time when I used to come here. Surely the Lord is in this place. So hands up all those that were here in 1954 in this church. Oh, so I'm the only one. Well, the Lord was in this place then, and I remember lots of people who were here during the 10 years that my father was the minister here. And the vast majority of them are now in glory. But you're here, and I thank God he's still here. So though the text isn't here anymore, the Lord is still in this place. And David has asked me to read the scripture for this morning. Our theme over at Ashingdon, by the way, greetings from our church at Ashingdon. I'm sure they would be delighted to know that that's where we are this morning. And our theme this year is powerful people. And you'll notice that all the powerful people in the Bible had their faults. And I'm encouraged by that, because it means that we can be powerful as well. But we're going to read this morning from Ruth chapter 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness, as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." At this they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me, The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning.
Thank you, Maureen. And it's great to be back here again with our friends of fellowship here in Pitsea. And we always enjoy the opportunity to come and to share as you gather. I love the seasons. And particularly, can I say, that I do love the time when winter is ending and spring is on its way. And the signs of that taking place. And within the last week or so, we've got snowdrops that are now out in the garden. And we have a few daffodils that have begun to come into bloom. And there's that sense in which, yes, spring is on its way. That sense of new life, that sense of awareness that, once again, our Creator God has brought into being the fulfillment of his promise that seed time and harvest would not cease, that he would continue to maintain his faithfulness. And as we see seasons in nature, so I believe there are seasons in our own individual lives. There are seasons in the life of a church fellowship as well. And it's seeking to come to an understanding of what season you and I might be in and what season a church may or may not be in. Because as we look at the book of Ruth, we see here the evidence of seasons and the evidence of how God is at work in every one of the situations and circumstances that unfolds before us as we look at this little book. A little book that shows so much of the sovereignty of God. A little book that emphasizes how that God is present in every season. And as we look at the opening of the book, we recognize that there are times in a season when difficulties will arise. And I suppose for all of us, we do struggle when difficulties come. None of us like to be in that difficult experience or that difficult time. And we have a sense of identity with the family as we read how that they go off in search of trying to find a better future, and disaster overtakes them. And as a result of this disaster and a result of this difficulty, it has a marked effect upon Naomi. And as she returns to her hometown, the evidence of the effect is seen in her response to the people when they come out to greet her. Well, she says, I want you to know that my name was once Naomi, which means pleasant. But you need to know now that I've changed my name. Because now my name's going to be Mara. I'm now a bitter individual. I'm now an individual who feels that God has failed. I'm now an individual who believes that God has abandoned. I'm now an individual who has come into a season where it's been difficult and where it's been dark and where there does not seem to be any evidence of God at work. And so I now want you to know that that is where I now sit. I now sit in a place where my faith has gone and where my feelings are that it's all pointless. I'm so grateful that when God sees us in that season, he doesn't abandon us. I'm so grateful for the fact that God allows us to be real and to be honest with where we're at. And I think as far as when we come into meeting with the family of God, we need to be people who are open and honest as to whatever season we may be in or whatever struggles we may be having. Perhaps for you this morning, it is not an easy time. Perhaps for you this morning, you are in a season where it seems as though it's very difficult. You've even begun to question, Where is God? Why has God allowed this to happen to me? Why is it that it's apparent, as far as I can see, that God has abandoned me? And when you're in that place, one of the messages that I want to really bring home to you is that powerful people have often come to that place and that season in their lives. Yet in the midst of that time, when it seemed as though God was not at work and that they had been abandoned, that was the time when they began to realize and recognize that in all things, God works together for good to those that love him and are called according to his purposes. And as Romans 8 tells us later on, that nothing separates us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus. So for you, if you're in a time of difficulty, then take hope in the knowledge that you're not abandoned, you're not forgotten, God's not turned his back on you, that there is hope, there is a future, and we will see how God begins to unfold that. See, the second thing that I notice about this story is that when Naomi is in this place where she feels that she's been abandoned, she comes back to a place called the House of Bread, and she comes back at the time when the harvest is beginning to come into being. Little signs that she could discern as she looked to show the faithfulness of God, to show the fulfillment of God's promise, to show that God is at work constantly. And for us too, in those times of difficulty, we also need to be people who discern what God may or may not be doing. Because sometimes we come to a place where we feel so down and so disillusioned that we can't see the evidence of God at work. In fact, the reason that Naomi and the family left Bethlehem in the first place was because there had been a famine. And now here is the evidence that even in that time of difficulty, there came a moment in time when breakthrough came. There came a moment in time when release came. There came a moment in time when God, who was at work, began to fulfill his purposes and his plan. And so for you and for me, in our time of difficulty, we need to begin to discern that God is at work. It's why we sing songs and encourage us. Songs like Great is Thy Faithfulness. Songs that remind us how that the God who we love, who we call Father, and who is committed to us, is a God who will give us those insights that show that despite what we're going through, we are not abandoned and we're not forgotten. We can see it so clearly in the lives of so many of God's people. One particular incident in the life of the Apostle Paul was an incident when he was on a ship in the midst of the storm. I wonder whether the winds were a bit like the winds we are experiencing today. I'm very glad that I'm not out in a boat on the sea at this time. We have, did have a narrow boat, and we used to really enjoy going off cruising on the boat. But one of the things that always was difficult was when there were strong winds. Because a narrow boat is, as per its name, it is extremely long and it's very narrow. It was not built to really cope well with strong winds. And so when there is a strong wind that is broadside on, then you have a great deal of difficulty maintaining the direction that the boat is going in. And if you're actually moored up and you want to go off and restart the journey, well, that is something again. I can remember on one occasion we were moored up and the wind was blowing and it was blowing into the side of the boat on the opposite side of where we were moored. So we were moored against the towpath, and the wind was blowing us against the towpath. And normally when you go to start off on your trip, I wander up to the front of the boat, and the boat's 58 feet long, wander up to the front of the boat, and I push the boat out, and then I wander back, and then go on the back, give a slight shove from the back, and the boat is out in the centre of the canal, and off we go. On this occasion, I went and pushed the boat out at the front, meandered my way back, and discovered when I got to the back, the front had been blown back in again. So I went back to the front, pushed it harder, and then did a bit more of a speedy walk back to the back, by which time the front was in again. So I went back to the front, pushed it again, and ran at a rate of knots to the back, and the front was in again. In the end, the only way we were able to overcome that wind of adversity was for us to drag the boat into a place where there was a bit more shelter and where the wind was not against it, so that we could then get underway. The Apostle Paul, on the occasion when he was in the midst of this storm, goes and says to the crew and to all the people that are there, he says, God has shown to me that in the midst of this storm, he is still in control, and although the boat will be lost, no lives will be lost. There is a purpose in what is happening. He discerned what God was doing at that time in the purpose and plan that God had for him personally and for those that were with him. And so for you, begin to discern what God may be doing in your moment of difficulty. Begin to discern what God may be doing in the life of this church at this point in time. Begin to discern what God might be revealing as he speaks to you and as you seek his purpose and his plan for the future and for what he wants to accomplish and do. And then we go on to discover that as the story unfolds, in the season in which they find themselves, there is a time in which direction is given. Proverbs says this: in all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. Do not lean to your own understanding. And it's important that we realize that we do have to have a sense of the direction that God is giving to us. For Ruth, she comes to a point in her life of a major decision. Her mother-in-law has said to her and to the other daughter-in-law, you go back. You go back because that's going to be the best thing for you two to do as far as your future is concerned and as far as your destiny is concerned. But although that may, from a human standpoint, appear to be the case, from a divine standpoint, that was not the case. And something had been triggered in Ruth's life, whether it be through meeting with Naomi and her husband, whether it be connected with the family, but something had triggered in Ruth's life that began to take her on a journey. A journey where she too wanted to discover a God who could be in relationship with her. She came from a people and from a nation that did not know this God in such a personal way. But she began to realize there was a God who was not some distant figure, but a God who could come close and a God who could come near. And so for her, at that moment of decision, she says, you know what, I want to know what the direction is for my life at this time. And I believe the direction for my life is to do not what, from a human standpoint, is the logical thing to do, but I have decided that I'm going to stay with my mother-in-law.
I decided that I'm going to go where she goes. I'm going to remain in her presence, because I've decided that that will take me into a place where I will make a discovery of a God who's all powerful, and yet a God who can come close, and into a discovery of a destiny that God may have for me. So I need to say to you, you need to know the direction that God would give to you, for you to take. And it's not a decision that is made simply by weighing up the pros and weighing up the cons and coming to a position where you think, okay, this is the way forward. Maureen has been going through our souvenir box. Our souvenir box contains material that is probably up to 50 years old.
Older.
Even longer. It contains letters that I sent to Maureen when we were courting one another, and letters that she sent to me. There's all sorts of material that have been found in this souvenir box. But one of the things that again came to mind was when in 1980, and we would have been at Ashendon 40 years this year, in 1980 we received a call to go to Ashendon to pastor the church there. And our home church was Rayleigh, and we were very heavily involved, and that was the church that Bill, who was the pastor here at Pitsea, that was the church that Bill went to from here. That's how I ended up meeting Maureen, because he turned up with four daughters. And church took on a very new significance for me, I have to confess. And at that time, it wasn't anything to do with spiritual desire or seeking. It was the fact that four daughters turned up with the pastor. God was later on to bring home some real spiritual change and development. By the time that we received this call to go to Ashendon, which we've struggled with, and yet to come to the position we really believe that's what God was saying to us, we wrote to Bill, because Bill by then had left Rayleigh and was now on the mission field in Guyana. And we wrote to Bill, and Maureen did, she's much more of a writer than I am, and said to Bill, this is what we felt God was saying. This was the direction that God was giving to us. And we got a letter back. And the letter that came back from Bill was a letter that said, no, I do not think you're hearing this right. Do not think this is the direction you should take. You are heavily involved in Rayleigh. I think that's where your place is. That's where you should remain. We were so convinced that we had felt that we'd heard from God, that we wrote back, or Maureen wrote back to Bill, basically said to Bill, we can fully understand the reasoning behind why you are so uncertain about this step that we are taking, but we do really believe this is right. Could you try and lay aside your own personal feelings and preferences on that matter, and just ask God to give you some indication of the rightness of this or not. And Bill very graciously did just that. He went back began to ask God, can you give me some sense of whether this is right or not? And in doing that, God reminded him of what he had said to Bill in 1948. Of a word that he'd given and a promise he'd made. In 1948, Bill was the minister of Ashendon Elam. At that time, it was a church of about three people. Bill had been praying and seeking God and asking God, as I'm sure all church leaders do, for increase, for harvest, for breakthrough. And God spoke to Bill and said to Bill, very clearly, Bill, you know, had forgotten about this until God reminded him, but God very clearly spoke to Bill at that time and said, during your time as leader, you will not see breakthrough and you will not see increase. But in the time of your son, that will be when that season will come. And in the Bible, the son-in-law is the same as the son. I was born in 1948. And so it was that promise and that direction that God gave to Bill that resulted Bill in sending a letter to us, both reminding us of that promise and affirming that we should take the direction that we felt God was leading us in. And I'm very grateful that God has been faithful and has kept those promises. And it's nothing to do with our leadership, but we have seen increase, we have seen blessing, we have seen a season of abundance and outpouring, and God has been so, so good. But you need to know that in the season you are in, that you do need to get a sense of the direction that God is leading you along. And when he speaks into your life, to both recognize his voice and to understand that he is sovereign in that moment. Now we could ask all sorts of questions. Why is it, as far as Ashington was concerned, that the season of growth was not going to be until, in fact, 32 years later after the word had been given? I went to Ashendon when I was 32. Why is it that God said, no, there is not going to be that season of growth until that moment in time? We cannot understand fully the heart or mind of God. His ways are not our ways, and his thoughts are not our thoughts. But we do need to know the direction that God is leading us on. So for Ruth, she said, I'm going to take the direction that will take me further forward. See, in that time of taking that direction, it also became a time of discovery for her, because she was to discover more and more how God was in control and how God was at work within her life and her situation. How much have you discovered about God in the terms of his faithfulness to you and his working in your life? And in your own journey of faith, is it still a time of discovery? Are you still enjoying the adventure? As we have got older, we've recognised that it's very easy to fall into a position where you think you might have arrived, but there's nothing else to find. But the older I've got, the more I've realised there's so much more to discover. I'm more excited about my journey with my Heavenly Father than I've ever been. More excited about what God is accomplishing and doing within the life of the Extra Church group than I've ever been. More excited about the discoveries that I am continuing to make in my walk with God. And God has wanted to take you on a time of discovery too. Again, going back to our narrowboat trips, one of the things that Maureen particularly enjoys is being on a canal that we've never been on before. Because you never quite know what's around the corner. You never quite know what discoveries you're going to make. And the canals are just amazing places. They, in one sense, take you back in time. And yet, at the same time, there's a lot of evidence of how modern life has brought itself into touching and impacting the canals. As far as going back in time is concerned, just using the lock gates is a reminder how that when they first were made and that system was developed, they've never been able to improve on it. Those lock gates, although the gates themselves may be newer gates, the way they operate, the way they work, is still exactly the same. Discovery is great. The journey is amazing. And I just want to encourage you, never stop walking the journey. Never stop running the race. That's why the Apostle Paul catches this thought of discovery when he tells us about the fact that he forgets the things that have been and is looking forward and pressing on to the things that are to come. The Apostle Paul never lost that sense of excitement and that desire for the journey and the adventure that he was on. And so if your season is a season where God's doing new things, a season where he's opening up to you new opportunities, a season where he's just touching your life in a new way, a season where you're discovering something fresh and something new about him or the way he's working in your life or what he's doing in your circumstances, be excited about it. Be in that place where you are never losing the awe and the wonder of this God who is a God who created the world and yet who wants to come close to us. Because the final thing I want to say is this, that in any season that you and I may be in, whether it's a difficult season, whether it's a season where we are discerning that there are indications that God's at work and he's just giving us an insight into what he's doing to fulfill his promises, where it's a season where we are discovering more and more just that God is wanting to reveal to us the amazing opportunities that he can present to us as we continue with our walk with him. He has for you and he has for me, as he did for Ruth, a time and a season when we will enter into the destiny that God has for us. From that moment of decision when Ruth said to her mother-in-law, "I am not going to leave you. I'm not going to stop going where you're going, because I want to discover and discern and know and experience the God you know and that you've discovered and that you've discerned." Little did she know that as a result of that decision, her ultimate destiny be that she would be in the genealogy of Jesus himself, that she would be a woman who God identified as a result of her journey and as a result of her experiences in the different seasons of her life, knowing that God was sovereign and in control, that she would become the testimony that confirms to you and to me that whatever season we are in, we have a God who's sovereign, a God who's faithful, and there is a destiny for you and for me personally, and a destiny for this church fellowship, and for the future that God holds in his hands for his honour and for his glory. God bless you.